Welcome, everyone. Glad you are here. Today, we will explore objects, inheritance, and generic operations, moving from closure-based state to message passing and data-directed dispatch in Python. Last lecture, we learned that assignment changes what a name points to and that non-local lets an inner function update a binding in an enclosing scope. That immediately gives us a way to build stateful objects with closures. Data lives in the environment, and behavior lives in functions that can mutate that data.
So an object is basically a controlled place where mutation happens, but wrapped up so users do not touch the internals directly?
Exactly. Today, we will see Python classes as a convenient standardized wrapper around that idea. State as attributes, behavior as methods, and a clean interface. Then we will push further. What if the same abstract data can have multiple concrete representations? We will build a tiny generic operation system to make that work. Let us start with something we already know how to build from functions: a bank account that remembers a balance and responds to messages. Here, the returned value is a dispatch function. Before you run it, what do you think is the actual data of the account?
The data is kind of invisible. It is the holder and balance bindings in the closure, and only deposit and withdraw can change balance.
Yes. The state is captured variables, and the interface is the set of messages you accept. That is already object-oriented in spirit, message passing. Notice the abstraction barrier. Users never touch balance directly. They can only ask for balance or call deposit and withdraw. Now, Python classes basically standardize this packaging of state plus operations, and they give us a built-in dispatch mechanism, method lookup.
So a class is like a cleaner, more uniform way to write the dispatch function?
Exactly. That key idea on the slide is the bridge. When you send a message like deposit or withdraw, you are choosing behavior based on a name, and the hidden state changes as a result. That is the object-like behavior we will formalize with classes. Here is the same account but as a class. The constructor is named init, and it stores holder and balance inside the instance. Before we run anything, what do you think this will print at the end? For acc.balance, after depositing 20 and withdrawing 10 from 50.
Start at 50, deposit makes it 70, withdraw makes it 60. So I predict 60.
Good. The key is that methods update self.balance. So the state moved from an environment binding into an attribute on the object. And self is not magical. It is just the instance that receives the method call. Python passes it automatically when you write acc.deposit.
So the class is like the template, and each instance has its own balance attribute stored separately.
Right, and the dot notation is how we interact with that state: acc.holder and acc.balance. Rate attributes and acc.deposit 20 calls. A method that changes acc.balance on that specific instance. A common mystery is, where does self come from? This slide shows the simplest desugaring story. We call opt.add to x with 5. Predict what prints on the first line.
Starting at 10, add 5 gives 15. So first print is 15.
Now the second line calls the same function, but explicitly, demo.add to x of obj and 5. That should print 20 because we mutated the same object again. So object.method is really a bound method. It packages the function together with the receiver object ready to supply self.
That makes it feel closer to closures again. A function plus an environment, except now, the environment is the instance.
Exactly. And the last piece is dispatch. When you write obj.method, Python looks at the class of the instance to decide which function to bind. If obj is a subclass that overrides the method, you get that version, not the base class one. Now, for a subtle but crucial distinction. Some attributes belong to each instance, and some belong to the class as a shared default. In this code, interest is on the class. Predict the first print, 100 times 2% is what?
2% of 100 is 2.0, so I expect 2.0.
Next, we mutate the class attribute itself to 5%. That changes the default lookup for every instance that does not define its own interest. Then we assign s1.interest. That does not modify the class. It creates an instance attribute that shadows the class variable for s1 only.
So attribute lookup is kind of like, check the instance dictionary first, then fall back to the class dictionary.
Exactly. That is why self.balance is naturally an instance attribute unique per account, while savingsaccount.interest is a shared class default unless an instance shadows it. Inheritance lets us say a checking account is an account, but with one change in behavior. Before running, if Eve starts at 100 and withdraws 20, but we charge a fee of 1, what should the new balance be?
It should withdraw 21 total. So 100 minus 21 is 79.
Right. The override is just a different function attached to the subclass under the same method name withdraw, so client code does not change. And super is not magic either. It means continue the lookup in the parent class so we can reuse the parent's implementation.
So this is polymorphism. Same call shape, different behavior depending on what kind of account the object is.
And when you call withdraw method lookup stars on the object itself. If it is a checking account, it uses the override first, and only if it is not found does it fall back to account. Let us make the lookup process explicit because it explains both class variables and inheritance in one unified rule. First, Python checks the instance itself. If you set ch.interest, it lives here and shadows anything later. If the instance does not have the attribute, Python checks the class. That is where methods like withdraw are stored as functions.
And if the method is not on the subclass, it keeps walking up to account and so on?
Exactly. That walk is the method resolution order. And super just says, start that walk at the parent instead of at the current class. So far, we have seen single inheritance, one parent class. But Python allows a class to inherit from multiple parents, and that introduces a subtlety called the diamond problem. Look at this code. A defines X as the string A, B inherits from A, and adds nothing. C inherits from A, but overrides X to C, and D inherits from both B and C. Before running, what do you think D.x prints?
D does not have its own X and B does not either, so it could be A from A or C from C. I am not sure which one wins.
This is the diamond. D inherits from B and C, and both of those inherit from A. Python needs a rule for which paths to search first. The answer is C, 3 linearization, which gives the M, R, O, D, B, C, A, then object. Python walks this list in order when looking up any attribute.
So Python checks D, then B, then C, and it finds X equals C on C before it ever reaches A. That is why it prints C, not A.
Exactly. The key rule is go left to right across parents, but never visit a shared ancestor before all of his children have been visited. That prevents A from being search before C.
Ru.
Search left to right across parents, but never visit a class before all is children. Now we shift from OOP syntax to the deeper design problem. Multiple concrete representations for the same abstract data. This code builds a tiny data-directed dispatch system like SICP. Rectangular and polar complex numbers get type tags so we can tell them apart. When you call magnitude or real part, the generic selector uses apply generic to look up the right implementation from a table.
So adding a new representation is additive. You only add new put entries and existing generic selectors do not change.
Exactly. This is the SICP idea behind generic operations. Separate the interface from the representation and make extension local. And the payoff is that one abstract type can have many internal forms at once. As long as each representation installs its methods in the table, clients just keep calling the same generic selectors. Let us zoom out and compare three ways to decide what code to run when types vary. First is explicit type checking with isinstance. It works, but every time you add a new type, you often have to edit old code in many places.
That sounds like the opposite of an abstraction barrier. The generic function needs to know all the cases.
Second is method dispatch, call x.add. That is the OOP story. And duck typing says we care about the interface, not the concrete type. Third is the SICP table approach. Apply generic uses an operation name and a list of type tags to find the right method in a table. Finally, message passing flips the table. The data object itself receives an operation name, like our make account dispatch function from earlier.
So the big question is, do we expect to add new types more often, or add new operations more often and choose a structure accordingly?
Time to predict before running. We create a checking account with balance 10, then we set cheech.withdraw fee to 5, then we withdraw 3, and finally print the balance. Focus on the first bullet. Setting D, h.withdraw fee, creates an instance attribute that shadows the class attribute. So the fee used is 5, not 1.
So withdrawal of 3 becomes withdrawal of 8. Total and 10 minus 8 is 2. I predict it prints 2.
Yes, balance becomes 2. The mechanism is the same lookup chain we discussed. Instance attributes first, then class, then parents. For the reflection, use inheritance when you have an is, a relationship, and a stable interface. But consider apply generic tables when you need additivity across many representations and many independent packages.
So OOP is one dispatch strategy, but SICP gives us a vocabulary for choosing the right abstraction barrier when the system grows.
Thanks for watching this. Subscribe to Thinking in Math channel for this and other interesting math topics. And we always welcome your feedbacks. Leave your questions and suggestions in the comments.